You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You call that a news update? This is a news update. It's Neighbourhood Watch.
Your immigration minister has said something super racist. Is that right? Ooh. What's happened here?
Yeah, well, last week, our immigration minister, like you said, Peter Dutton, said that our former PM, Malcolm Fraser, made a mistake back in the 1970s when he allowed Lebanese Muslims to migrate to Australia. But the interesting thing, and maybe the reason why these comments were especially polarising, is that his issue isn't with those who originally migrated to Australia, it's with their descendants. So he says they make up the majority of people who have been charged with terror-related offences in recent times. So essentially he's saying that because people from a second or third generation Lebanese Muslim background represent a large portion of those who have travelled overseas to become foreign fighters, that means their ancestors shouldn't have migrated here 30, 40 years ago.
Is there a counter-argument being raised that perhaps if it's the second or third generation people doing these things, maybe that says more about the Australian context than it does the Lebanese?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not even just the Lebanese Muslim community organisations pointing out that this doesn't really make sense. I mean, it's sort of this dramatic causal link that no one else is seeing. And I think it underscores a lot of potential racism that underscores how we talk about minorities here in Australia, because the lack of outrage in Parliament compared to the outrage from the public is quite significantly different.
So is it that the public are going, what have you done? This is hugely racist, and Parliament has just been kind of quiet on it. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even Dutton himself is sort of sticking by his comments, saying, you know, oh, well, I've relied on the facts, and I just want an honest discussion. But most people aren't really seeing it as an honest discussion. They're just seeing it as an attack, which is completely understandable. And I mean, that's not to say there aren't people who do agree with him. I mean, there's, a couple of right-wing commentators and things like that. But generally, as a multicultural country, and a lot of people have come from, you know, they have ancestors who immigrated here, it's not really floating well with the general public.
I have seen that that great tweet, somebody saying, I wonder if he thinks that the Italians should have been kept out as well because of the mafia or something. You know, it does it does seem like incredibly broad strokes to label.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely.
So do you think, what do you reckon is going to happen now? Is the public just going to continue being outraged and Parliament continue being silent and him continue to just say racist stuff? Or
I mean, it seems like that. He's done a whole string of things lately. I mean, there's been, he suggested a lifetime refugee ban on people who travel here by boat. And he said refugees, or he suggested that they are illiterate, I think, a while ago. So, yeah, I mean, the government doesn't seem to have as much of an issue with him as the public does. I mean, PM Malcolm Turnbull was, he kind of skirts around it a bit. He, I think it looks like he disagrees, but, you know, I don't know. I think it's going to be the kind of thing that he'll end up being immigration minister until the next election, most likely, regardless of what the public thinks.
It does seem like he's a bizarre person to have in charge of your immigration.
Yeah.
Let's put the weirdly racist guy in charge of the immigrants. That's a good idea.
Yeah. No, it's weird. I'm an anti-immigration minister. I don't know. Yeah, it's weird.
That's one hell of a shadow cabinet kind of role. So the other thing that we were going to talk about is this tax on sugar, which apparently, so there's been an institute that has released some economic modelling, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. The Grattan Institute have recommended that a sugar-sweetened beverage tax be implemented to address increasing obesity rates. And so they basically want the government to introduce a tax of about 40 cents per 100 grams of sugar. So that basically means a price of a 2-litre bottle of soft drink would be boosted by about 80 cents or so. And it's one of those, like, a sugar tax is one of those things that feels inevitable because it seems to come up again and again, but it's never really gained enough traction for a whole range of reasons. Companies selling these products obviously aren't going to be any help in this area. And compounding the problem is that although people accept that sugar and especially sugary drinks aren't good for their health, they don't like the idea that the government, in effect, would be telling them what they should be buying when presumably they already know. So people are calling it a moralistic tax, and a lot of people are saying it will have a disproportionate effect on those on lower income. But a group that's supported the idea for a long time and keeps pushing for it are the Greens. So their current leader, Richard Di Natale, is a former GP. So the issue has probably been close to his heart for a while, and the party is reportedly going to push for a parliamentary inquiry into such a tax.
It does seem like an interesting parallel with tobacco, where on the one hand you want to discourage people from using it, but you also want to, for people who continue to smoke, to cover the costs, you know, the increased costs that they put on the public healthcare system and all that kind of thing. So is it being discussed in Australia in a similar kind of way? I mean, I don't know if this is because I pay a lot of excise tax myself, so I often think about excise taxes, but is it being discussed in that kind of similar moralistic but also practically trying to cover the cost of the burden on the healthcare system from this? Is it being discussed within that kind of framework?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, people are saying, well, you know, there's structural inequalities and things like that that mean, you know, why is soft drinks one of the few simple pleasures that people on lower incomes can afford? But then, of course, yeah, the argument that society as a whole is suffering, and it just makes sense to tax something that's bad for us because it is costing us.
And it has been acknowledged as being a regressive tax, because obviously you put in a tax like this that will statistically, in terms of proportion of income, that will increase people on lower, you know, affect people on lower incomes more than higher. Just like, I mean, GST is really a regressive tax. I pay more GST than a wealthy person as a proportion of my income. So it's been acknowledged as being regressive, but people are okay with that. Is that right? As part of this model.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, people have a problem with that, but people, the people who made the model are saying, well, it's regressive, but it's such a small part of people's income because, you know, a certain amount, especially if it's just on sugar-sweetened beverages, they're saying, well, people spend this much on sugar, which is a low proportion of their income, and then an even smaller amount is sugar-sweetened beverages. And, yeah, they're downplaying the effect, I think, because there are a lot of lower-income people who do buy a lot of sugar-sweetened drinks as opposed to whatever more expensive food and beverage options, apart from, you know, water, obviously. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I mean, you know, and as I said before, you know, the Greens are in support of this, but even they're divided. There's, like, the Greens councillor, Jonathan Shree from Brisbane, who's very against it. I mean, it's one of those things, yeah, I think people from all different parties have a different take on.
And the final thing is this, and you'll have to talk me through this because I don't really know how this will help, but it sounds super cute because it involves koalas. So apparently introducing daylight savings could help stabilise the koala population in southeast Queensland. Do you not have daylight savings in Queensland? Or
no, so Queensland is this really weird place because they've gone back and forth a bit. They dumped daylight saving in the 70s or something, and then they keep bringing it back as trials. They can't decide if they want it or not. But yeah, it's interesting that research has come out about this because it is quite logical. It just says that because most collisions occur during twilight or darkness between koalas and cars, the logical thing is to extend daylight because it would just help stabilise the rapidly decreasing koala population. They came to the conclusion that introducing daylight saving could reduce the number of koalas being hit by 8% on weekdays and 11% on weekends. So it would be quite dramatic.
That's a lot of koalas, right? Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's a lot. How many are people hitting with their cars at the moment? Like, oh, my God.
Like, hundreds, apparently. I know. It seemed unfair to drive in southeast Queensland because it sounds like these koalas just walking all over the roads. But the koala population in that area has declined by about 80% just in the past 20 years.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it is. Australia and, I mean, the fact that you guys have states, first of all, but also that then states do different things has forever confused me. So,
yeah,
you know, you'll be in one city and it'll be daylight savings, and then another city won't be daylight savings, and then all of a sudden some people were like, should we get daylight savings? It's been a very confusing time for me, but surely this would be one of the better reasons for Queensland to finally settle on getting it. How's it being received in Queensland? Are they pro daylight savings now, or does nobody really care?
Well, I think in the city areas and especially the southeast Queensland area, they're totally for daylight savings, and they're wondering why they're not, you know, in line with the rest of the east coast and the rest of the country. But there are a lot of rural Queenslanders who, like, their farming and things like that would be affected by daylight saving, and they, I don't know how it really affects farming, the details of it, but just they're against it, and that's why it's sort of never really happened for many years. So, I mean, there's been a lot of community consultations and proposals for a dual time zone arrangement, so only the southeast would have daylight savings, which is probably, I think, the most that has the most chance of happening. But yeah, who knows? I mean, the Premier at the time said so many people were opposed to the idea the last time they discussed it, so I don't know if it's overly hopeful for one of our animal icons. Yeah,
it does. I think I'm just going to continue on based on the conspiracy theory that farmers just don't want the government messing with the sun or some sort of some sort of conspiracy theory like that.
Yeah.
I've spent a lot of time in Queensland, and I feel like that'd be a legitimate conspiracy theory that people would have.
That was Neighbourhood Watch Ripper. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.